Well, folks, it just snowed in Texas. That is one of the signs of the apocalypse. The world's about to end. But before it does, you need to go to www.nttfgpod and subscribe. I'm Rock.
And I'm Archie.
Well, our opinions, they might not matter to some, but...
What are you doing in there?
It's a podcast.
Immature, crass, trashy. And those are their good qualities. These poor schmucks are a couple of IQ points away from eating paste. But when it comes to music, sports, and comedy, well, that's all they know. You're listening to...
Not These Two Fucking Guys.
Not These Two Fucking Guys podcast.
Yo, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I can't fucking believe this, bro. Are you gonna tell me Bruce is juiced? Are you gonna tell me he was bombed in the USA? Are you gonna tell me the boss was tossed? No fucking way,
oh,
dude.
Oh, my God.
If you know me, you know me. Bruce Springsteen is one of my top favorite musicians that I fucking cherish, love, respect, and listen to. And
masturbate to.
That's fucking weirdo. To hear this news at 71. Listen, I don't care. I hope he's laughing, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
you know, it's not a laughing matter for DWI. We know that, like getting into acts, but like I don't know. From our story, I think he had a shot at tequila. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're saying it's two shots of tequila.
So listen, I think of Bruce Springsteen as the Derek Jeter of baseball, a clean, well-respected career. That you didn't really hear, like, you heard rumors about Jeter, but allegedly he ran a clean career.
Correct. I mean, Bruce, I would disagree, and I'm going to go on a limb and say we're not going to have him on this podcast, right?
Yeah, probably not.
So I'm going to say, I mean, there was a little couple stories by him poking other guys' wives. Just saying.
No.
Dude, you heard that too. Don't stop.
I'll be honest with you. I never heard that.
You are a fucking Bruce apologist.
Yo, he quoting CNN, right? First of all, let me ask you a question. I'm not going to go off on this type of topic, but the question that I have was like, yeah, that fucking cop is a Republican.
First off, number one. All right, here's what I'm going to say.
You're going to let this fucking Democrat come strolling right through. It's his own town. It's like fucking, bro, he wasn't in Wyoming. He was in fucking Jersey right by his house.
They said it was like by Sandy Hook or like
whatever.
Like a state park. Let me tell you something. If he had two shots of tequila and you're the cop... You're the cop in New Jersey. Like, Bruce Springsteen is God in New Jersey.
God.
How in the motherfuck do you give him a ticket and arrest him?
How do you think that went?
First off, ready? We're gonna role play.
Yeah.
I'm the cop.
You'd be the cop.
Hi, Mr. Springsteen. How are you? How you feeling tonight? Were you drinking any?
Hey.
Ooh, you don't want to talk? Oh, you don't want to take a breathalyzer. Okay. We're going to handle it this way.
No.
Totally fine. Bruce, totally fine. I'm having a little party back at my house in a month. You're playing.
I'd be glad to.
Yeah. And you're not going to get arrested. Like, dude, I just don't. Again, we respect the boys and girls in blue. But I feel like that was something like.
But was it caught on a body cam or was
true.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, was it a body cam slash like fucking. All right, you ready? You pull somebody over. There had to be. What's the initial reason that I don't think I see? I get reckless driving. So maybe he went through a light. Maybe he fucking made a right on red. Maybe he fucking swerved. Whatever the case may be, you're a cop. I know you pull the license, right? If it's stolen, if it's this, if it's that, right? Bruce Springsteen. That's what comes up on your
All
fucking.
Right, but I'm gonna play devil's advocate here, right?
Yo.
So we're of a certain age.
That's fucking crazy.
If this cop is 22 years old, he doesn't know who the fuck Bruce Springsteen is.
Probably not. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? You're talking like a 50-year age difference.
But like...
And listen, I'm going to defend Bruce here.
You just put him down fucking 10 minutes ago.
Has he not in the past told us, and I quote, "In fact, I think I'm going down to the well tonight... And I'm going to drink till I get my fill." He fucking told us. Why are we so mad? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I'm not mad. I am not mad at this guy whatsoever. But then, all right, here's another devil's advocate type thing. Like, how about if the cop was like, bro, I can't let this guy fucking kill somebody. He's a national threat. How about if you fucking kill somebody?
Of course.
Who knows? Who knows, right? But it's Bruce Springsteen. You want to know what I thought about this. You ready? Watch this. You want to know what? You're about 6-7 minutes away, Mr. Springsteen.
Get in the car.
I'll follow you home.
No, not even follow you. Get in the car.
Get in the car.
We'll get your bike. We'll get your motorcycle tomorrow there.
Was it his motorcycle or was it?
It was a motorcycle. Which I actually
I understand now,
more.
I thought it was a car. Do me a favor.
It's a motorcycle.
Do me a favor. Be the cop. How'd this play out?
I'd be like, hi, how are you? Oh, license, registration, insurance, please.
No problem, officer. No problem.
Well, first off,
could I help you?
It looks like I'm looking at your license. Where were you born?
Freehold, in the great town of Freehold.
In what country would that be, sir?
I was born in the USA.
There you go. I would say, Bruce Springsteen. Wow. My dad told me lots about you.
Thank you.
I heard you are a Jersey piece of royalty.
Well, I don't like to talk about myself in that type of constructivism, but some say I might be.
All right. Okay, sir. We're not going to give you a ticket. However.
Officer, I just want to say, if you saw me swerving, there was a little darkness on the edge of town that was over here, and I couldn't see.
On yonder.
back in Youngstown.
But, like, if you're the cop, I just don't know how you're giving the guy a ticket. Drive him home.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's performing at every fucking family party you have for the next 5 years.
Do me a favor, Bruce. I got you, bro. You got me. Like that type of shit?
Yeah.
I got you, bro.
Yeah.
With the eyes. Nobody can. People out there can't see me, but my eyes are like this. Wide. Like, hey, man, you got me, right? I got you. Well, Mr. Springsteen, my man's in them. I still love you. I hope you want to know what? I hope he makes a fucking nice donation to Sandy Hook. Like he probably does. They arrested like almost it's almost like they arrested the governor. Crazy.
I read the story. It looked like he had two shots.
And tequila smells.
No, but I heard he's below the limit. So I don't know what that is. So I'm going to say two things. So, right. This happened. Look at the power of Bruce Springsteen. For some reason, this happened in November.
And they did not release it until now because Jeep probably
knew
that they were going to have to pull that commercial. So he's like, we're not fucking pulling. Do you know how long? Yeah. I read a story about him. They tried to fucking capture his ass for 10 years. And every year it got to just like, first 5-6 years, he was like, no, it's not, I don't do it. I don't fucking sell my music.
Yeah.
And I'm not in a fucking commercial. And then the guy stopped. And I think then this fell on his desk, and it's such a prolific time that he might think that it's the best time to release that commercial. He finally releases that commercial, and now what? He gets a fucking Dewey in the fucking hook.
Yeah, but like, see, the problem is it happened, and that's the thing. Like, they waited till the Super Bowl was over, till the ad was released, and now they announced that. And so first off, I watched the Super Bowl commercial with Bruce Springsteen. Number one, he came off like a fucking cowboy from the Midwest. He's not.
But Western Stars was his last album, and that was like the theme.
But yeah, I get it. We all want to meet in the middle. Yeah, no shit, right?
Now we do.
The answer is always somewhere in the fucking middle. We get it, Bruce. We all want to meet. He's wearing a fucking cowboy hat, I think, in the commercial.
You know, I thought he was. Yeah, I know we don't do that nowadays, but I thought it was going to be like a pack of Marlboros in his shirt pocket.
Yeah,
like,
right.
He looked like a Marlboro
band. Rolled up in his sleeve like fucking Schneider.
Yeah,
Schneider. So I watched that and I'm like, Bruce, you said you would never do this. I feel like a little bit you may have sold out, right? Then I hear about this story about the DWI retroactive November, and then I hear Jeep drop the ad. fuck you, Jeep. Right? I went completely a 180 on this. Now it's like, now Jeep drops the ad, and it's like, first I was like, Bruce, you kind of sold out there, pal. Now it's like, Jeep has it, knows what, I'm sure they knew what happened.
Yeah.
And just drops it. I know. After the Super Bowl, after they got their publicity, after fucking, the ad's not going to run probably much longer.
They knew going into the Super Bowl that they got to the Super Bowl, paid their money, and it showed, and maybe it showed a little bit after. But I think they, I think Jeep knew going into the Super Bowl going, well, I shot myself in the foot on this one, but we're just going to roll with it. Right?
Well, first off, let me tell you something. That commercial was obnoxiously long for someone who has a 10-second attention span like myself.
Yeah, it was pretty long. You got to be in the middle.
Yeah, and not for nothing. I get it. I get they were making a point, and it was a, you know, political point, whatever the fuck it was. Did you see the two Jeeps that appeared in the video? They're from the fucking 80s.
The Wrangler.
I mean, right? maybe. I'm not a marketing whiz. Throw something out there that's from like this year, last year, something you want to sell. We get it. We get it, Jeep. And you dropped old Mr. Springsteen.
Yo, Rocco.
What's up, pal?
It could take half the interview just naming all of this guest's accomplishments. So I'm going to break it down real, real quick. You ready?
Let's hear it.
Record executive.
Check.
Artist management.
Check.
Broadcaster, host, interviewer on radio, TV, and internet.
Check on all three.
Oh, let's not forget author.
And check.
He is one of the most respected personalities in the world of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. And to this day, people still try to stump the trunk, which ironically used to happen to Rocco's sister before she got her nose done.
Whoa.
Welcome to Not These Two Fucking Guys podcast, fellow New Jerseyan, Eddie Trunk.
Guys, Rocco, Archie, thank you for having me.
What's up, dude? First and foremost, how are you and your family?
All good. I've got no complaints, man. I have no right to complain. I've been lucky to keep my main job, which is my daily radio shows, and be able to do those from a home studio, which I had always done anyway. So that was great. And, you know, I'm lucky. I mean, I've got a good size house so everybody can have their own space. I've got a little house down at the Jersey Shore if I need to get a little break. And, nice. Although I've taken a ton of hits like anybody in terms of some gigs and money, having my anchor job and still getting a paycheck has been a blessing. So I'm in no position to complain about anything. I think more about people that had a hard time making a living through this or live alone or in small apartments. And I'm not in any of those categories, luckily. So I've nothing to complain about. And I hope we're on the other side of it sooner than later.
Well, that's good to hear. It's also good to hear that if you have any free weekends at that Jersey Shore house, me and Archie are definitely doubtful.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, right. Many a weekends for me and this guy going down.
Too many.
Called a Benny and going down the shore.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was a Benny, too, up until just a few years ago. I mean, it was always a dream of mine to have a little place down there. I grew up going to Lavalette, and my family had a place there for a little bit. My aunts and uncles and my grandmother when I was a little kid. So I have a huge history of being a Benny, as we call it. And it was only in the last 3-4 years that changed. And I'll tell you, I find myself, like, I like going down there in the winter. Most people would be like, what do you do? It's so quiet. There's nothing going on. But that's exactly why I like it. It's like really super quiet. So it's a nice little getaway spot. And I'm fortunate I was able to swing it a few years ago.
Once every couple summers, my wife and I, we had two little girls, but we would get a shore house. And even though it's, you know, an hour and a half away, we would just go down, and it's just, you're just getting away because we're from like the Essex County area.
Yeah.
So we would go down to either Point. Or, Seaside or something like that, get a shore house for their, you know, a week or two and just enjoy it, man, you know?
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have. I mean, I've been lucky. I haven't rented it or had to rent it out. So it's nice to know it's always there so I can kind of drop in at any time. And, it's just nice being down there. Like you said, for me, it's 90 minutes as well, but it's a totally different, feels like totally different vibe. So it feels like you're like really away.
Yes.
I tell you, I think we all kind of live in the same area. And every so often, I'm just like, why the fuck don't I just move down the shore? I'm like, and people are like, oh, well, like you said, oh, wintertime, no one's there. I'm like, great. that sounds awesome.
Rocco, I got to tell you, look, I'm from New Jersey and I've lived here my whole life. And, you know, I'll always be a Jersey guy. But as I'm older, I'm now 56. I am very much of the mindset of like, I'm ready to get out.
yeah.
I understand why when I was a kid, I could never understand why so many older people from New Jersey and New York were in Florida.
Yeah.
And now at 56, I realize why Florida is New Jersey, New York South. So I'm ready. My wife, not so much. My kids are still in high school, so it's going to be a little bit.
Yeah.
But I've been looking around at some other states and places. I probably would always keep the place at the shore. But for full time, at some point, you know, I'm definitely thinking of it. And I said to my wife like a couple weeks ago, I said, you know, I actually wouldn't mind living down here full time. Like, you know, right. We're right in the area of like Lavalette and around there. And I was just like, I would actually like, I'm so wanting to leave the state, but I actually feel like I'm in a different state when yeah. I'm down here. So I put it on the table. I mean, I don't know. The place there is not nearly big enough to live year round,
yeah.
but you know, that's not to say I couldn't change that if I decided to do it. So I don't know. Anything's on the table, but it's not a crazy idea because it's so quiet. If you like just chill and quiet and only a couple stores open and everything, it's great. It's awesome.
Exactly. Exactly. So I want to switch it up a little bit. A couple of years ago, the Stanhope House in Stanhope, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Rocco and I had the pleasure of opening up one of your speaking engagements. I don't know if you remember probably the last one you might have did there.
Yeah. I remember doing the Stanhope House, yeah.
Okay. So Rocco and I, we're in a local band, and we were one of the bands on that bill. And we had such a good time. And to hear you speak, and I got a little pissed because the fucking crowd was like loud. And I'm like, I'm all nerding out with music. And I'm like, I want to hear his fucking stories. And I'm drinking with the rest of them, but I'm like, shut up. But when in Rome, I had the opportunity to try to stump the trunk that night.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. And it was the a question of, I'm not going to get the whole into it, but it was a question of Peter Steele. He reincarnated carnivore, and he got Joey Z to be a guitar player. And you said to me you were sweating a little bit, but then you got it. You did get it.
What's up, man?
Archie from Bloomfield.
Hey, Archie.
How are you?
Good.
2006, 2007. Peter Steele. Peter Steele. Reincarnated carnivore. They played Lack in Open Air, Chicago, I believe it was. Who was the guitar player that he recruited to play?
In the reunion of carnivore. Was it anyone that was in Type O?
No, but close to the family.
Was it someone from Life of Agony? Was it? I got it. Who was it? Was it Joey?
Joey Z.
Joey Z, wow. Hey! Oh my God.
Good job, bro.
Thank you, man. Woo! Took me a set, man. I actually got beads of sweat on my head working that one.
Oh wow! Well, it's funny, man, because I have people come up to me, whether it's from the TV show or doing live gigs, and they'll be, you know, they'll say to me, you know, hey, I stumped you on this, or I did. And honestly, it's happened so many times, and I did over 100 episodes of That Metal Show. I honestly don't remember every encounter, obviously, but it's really funny what a thing that turned into being, and the whole origins of the whole stump the trunk thing. And I don't for a minute think I know it all.
Yeah.
And it just became a fun thing that got played up and turned into really a big deal for a while. And I'm just grateful to be known for something and have the chance to do it. But
yep.
I went around the country and did speaking things like that. And they were a lot of fun, and they were very different every environment, as you would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So, and some like Stanhope House, was interesting. And it was fine. Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, it was fine. I've been in way worse settings than that. And I've been in amazing settings too. So you just don't know. Like, a lot of the problem you run into when you do bars and clubs is that, and you understand, people are out for a night, they're drinking, they're amped up, they're, mm-hmm. you know, they're listening to music. If there's five rock bands on before you, and then all of a sudden you got this guy coming out and sitting there saying, "Let me tell you about the time I interviewed Axl Rose." Like,
yeah,
the fuck, who cares? You know, half the people care, and the other half are there to play pool and have a drink, and they don't want to hear you yapping.
Yep.
So it can be a challenge at times, but, you know, whenever I did them, I would try to tell the people that booked me, "Hey, look, this is what it is. Try to promote it more like you would a comedy show or something." Mm. But inevitably, they would still put on five local bands that sold tickets or something before, and you walk into this buzzsaw of energy that half the people just don't want to know about it. So I got used to it, and it, just like anything, there were good moments, okay moments, and some pretty Spinal Tap moments too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, lucky for you, we were direct support, so there wasn't much energy before you. So you're welcome. Nah, it was a fun night, and a lot of my friends were like, you know, listen, me and Archie are friends. Are like, not some of them are not into music, and definitely not into, like, we play like a heavier hard rock / metal. They're definitely not into that. It was actually refreshing to hear somebody after us talking and telling stories and answering questions. Like, oh, that was definitely different and cool. So,
yeah, it can be hard. It can be hard to keep focus, you know, when you got people yelling and ordering drinks and playing pool or whatever. It can be hard. I did one in one that jumps out. I did one in I want to say maybe it was Kentucky or something like that a couple Ooh. Of years ago. And It was just horrible. It's like there were a lot of people there, but they had no idea what was going on. And there was a pool table right next to the stage, and people calling their shots, playing pool. And there was hardly a PA, and it was just like there was no back area at all. So, you know, I stood out by the dumpster, freezing my ass off, waiting to get called in. It was nuts. So look, it's no different than a touring band or anything. You get into a million different environments. And for the people that do show up, you hope they had a fun night that were there for you.
Hey, Trunk, what do you think? Corner pocket?
Exactly.
So I also want to talk about your podcast. I think this is awesome. I love that you stepped into the podcast land. I know that, I believe it was like 2014, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it actually was. That's exactly when it was.
Okay. Radio, hardcore radio, TV, and then you decided to into podcast land. Like, I know that Rocky and I started this a little while ago, and I know it's a different, obviously we don't have your experience, but it's a different animal. What were the differences between radio and podcasting, or is it just blend into one?
Well, the reason for the podcast when I started it mm-hmm. versus now is actually very, very different. So when I started the podcast in 14, I was approached by a company called Podcast One,
okay.
who were one of the leading podcast producers. They do Adam Carolla's show. They do some really big stuff. And at the time, I'm good friends with Chris Jericho, the wrestler.
Correct.
And Jericho had just started a podcast with this company. And he said, "Dude, you should do a podcast." And I was just like, "I'm already doing a couple radio shows and it just would seem redundant to me. Yeah. I don't know if I want to do that." He's like, "No, it's another thing." You know, and I knew at that point podcasting was already a big deal, obviously. But I was just, you know, I was like, I'll have a conversation with the company. So I met with the guy in New York who was working with Podcast One, who was signing up new shows. And we had lunch and we were talking, and he's an old radio guy and he was telling me about it. And at that time, I was doing only two radio shows a week. I was doing my syndicated FM show, and I was doing one show a week live on Sirius XM. So I had a little extra time in my schedule. And the other thing about it was I also had always wanted to have an outlet to potentially do interviews and talk to people who weren't like right in the wheelhouse of what people would expect from me. So, and I'm talking still music stuff for the most part, but not necessarily hard rock. If there was something outside of that, or if there was a producer or somebody that really wouldn't make sense on radio because it's not a big enough name, that I was like, okay, it'd be cool to have this other outlet to do that. So that's what the podcast started out being. And I was doing interviews exclusively for it and content just for it for about 3 years.
Okay.
And then what changed was I was hired by SiriusXM to do a daily rock talk show, which I do still currently. So they launched this channel in 16 called Volume, which is channel 106, and it's an all music talk channel.
Yep.
And they came to me and asked me if I wanted to be the full one of the full-time hosts up for the launch. And I said, yeah, as long as I can talk about rock and stay in rock, I'll do it. So it turned out to be a tremendous gig, which I still have to this day. And when I started doing that, suddenly my radio load went from 2 shows a week to 7 shows a week and 6 of them live. And I was like, This doesn't make any sense to do, like, say I interview Steve Harris from Iron Maiden.
Mm-hmm.
And then what am I going to do? Say to him, hey, dude, stay on the phone or stay on the line and give me another hour for my podcast. It would just be redundant.
Yeah.
So I said to SiriusXM, I said, hey, can we do something? I've got this podcast. Can we do something where I take an interview from the radio show and put it out as my podcast so that people that don't get Sirius or XM or people who can't get it outside of the US or Canada can hear what I'm doing. And they were pretty cool about it and said, yeah, we'll let you do that as long as you wait 10 days after the interview originally aired. So okay. The interview is live on their air and then it lives on their app on demand for like 10 days. Then I could repurpose it. So that's for the last 4 years, all the podcast has been a repurposing of one interview that I do from my SiriusXM show with a new open and whatever around it.
Gotcha.
So it's two different things. It started out as its own thing. And now it's really just another repurposing of an interview for people who don't have Sirius or XM or live outside of areas where you can get it. And, it's been great. And the big change now that literally just happened, which is not really even known, but and it's just a behind the scenes thing. The podcast is actually going to be soon in the next couple months moving under the umbrella of SiriusXM because they bought a podcast company called Stitcher. So now it's going to be it's going to be completely in-house with them. And it's nothing against Podcast One. They've been great and it's been great to work with them. But if the content's coming from the radio show anyway, keeping it all under the same umbrella creates even more opportunities to cross promote it. So we'll see how that goes. That won't be a change that anybody listening is really going to notice, but it's just something behind the scenes that will probably help get it out there even more, hopefully, because of the ability to turn the interviews around quicker and promote it more through the radio show.
So obviously you're a Jersey guy. We've been fans for a long time. When you launch your show on Volume, and I want to say again, dates are always kind of like scattered to me.
But
I want to say it was 2016. It was around that time. And you had one of my favorite artists on. It was a very poignant interview with Phil Anselmo. This was right after, well, not right after, but I guess months after the Dimebash incident. And I thought, you know, for a new platform you were doing with this channel, like, what a great interview, because Phil's an intense dude. He's, you know, you guys even talk about it, like almost people are intimidated by him, but I thought it was awesome of how, not saying you stood up to him, but you weren't going to let those questions go about what happened at Dimebash. And Phil went through the gamut of emotion to angry, pissed, happy, joking, you know, feeling loved from the couple callers you took. And I thought that interview like really just had it all.
Yeah, I remember that very clearly. And that was done in person. He was in the studio with me sitting right next to me. And there were a lot of people that coming out of after that interview said to me, were you scared? Like, did you feel he was going to pop you in the face, or did you feel like tension or what? And I said, no, because I don't know Phil well, but I think he's often misunderstood. And I think because of the way he talks, and he's a very intense, deep baritone. And I think people misinterpret that for him being like trying to be intimidating or whatever. But that's, I don't really get that. I think that's just, you know, from where he's from and, you know, how he speaks. So I wasn't concerned about that. And look, you know, having done this now coming up for almost 40 years, believe it or not, you have to figure out a way to ask the questions that you know people want to hear the answers to, and try to do it in a respectful, diplomatic way that's not going to get you popped in the face or get you to have to walk out of the room. And it's a little easier for me than maybe some others, just because having been in the game so long, and these people, if I don't know them already, they may know me and they know of me, and there's a mutual respect, I think. So it's usually works out. And that was one that certainly worked out. And you know, what's interesting that you bring that up. I'm just realizing, like, outside of a couple text messages here and there, I don't think I've had Anselmo on since. And I should absolutely reach out to him and see if he'd like to come back on again, because I just read where Pantera is like releasing a beer. And and Phil's been out doing Pantera songs when they were touring. So there's a few things to talk to him about. So you put that in my head. I'm going to try to get him back on.
That's awesome. Yeah, we've had Steven Taylor and Joey Gonzalez from the Illegals, and their tour was, you know, the last one opened up for Slayer. They were doing, you know, a Pantera set. But I remember watching that interview and I thought it was awesome. Listen, first off, if Phil comes in your studio, you know, he feels comfortable with you. And obviously you have his respect. But I think the way you commanded that interview was really, really awesome. And I'm like, go Eddie. Like, because again, he's an intimidating dude sometimes.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I do remember after we did that, we took photos. And I have them, and we're in a boxing stance. Yes. So we were like mock fighting.
Yeah.
And because we were just doing that, though, because he's a big boxing fan. Sure. And I'm a bit of a boxing fan myself. And I think we were talking about boxing, and he was talking about, you know, because I'm a pretty big guy. He's like, you know, did you ever consider boxing? I was like, no, but you know, we have photos like this, I know, which just kind of goes with the tone of that interview, even though it was not adversarial at all. We were just having an intense conversation about a really important subject, actually, with what he was going through at the time, the accusations.
But I'll tell you what, here's what I, you know, I was just like obviously studying the interview, and it was you helped him tell his side of the story. Where I felt like sometimes, you know, he where the anger would take over and the frustration, because he knows that he wasn't wrong, or he felt that way. You kind of like drew it out of him, and that was surely remarkable.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Nah, man.
I do remember that interview, and I just remember, well, Eddie, that deep gravelly voice speaking at his side. So now you don't have to name any names, but have you ever had any interviews where maybe it did get a little you might not know what's going to happen next throughout your career? Everything mostly civil to the point.
Yeah. I mean, I had interviews that went kind of differently than I expected them to go. The only time I ever had an interview that comes to mind where I actually asked the artist to leave and ended it early was, it was a band that nobody's ever heard of because they never made it. But there was this band that came in, this would have been over probably 20 years ago, and they came into my studio at the time. My show was on WNEW out of New York. And this, there was a band that I think if the name was, I think they were called The Unband. That was the name. And they just put out a record on a label. And if it's coming back to me right, I think they had done a Billy Squire cover. And they had, that got my attention, and the record was pretty cool. And the label rep was like on me to have them on. And I said, yeah, sure. I love giving a new band a shot. So have them come in. And they did. And I just remember them being super annoying. And they had like a real rock star swagger about them and the way they were conducting themselves when nobody knew who they were. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, guys, this isn't working. And then I was just like, I ended it. I'm like, all right, guys, thanks. You know, and it wasn't like we had a fight or anything. It was just like I ended it and, you know, wanted to get them out of there. Because it just, you can pull off some of that shit if you're like a huge name that people really will tolerate and sit through that stuff. But when you're a band that nobody knows, and you're sort of big time and people are acting like you're Guns N' Roses or whatever, it just doesn't work. And it just was not working. I mean, there's other stuff that happened too. I mean, again, nothing adversarial, but when we had Axl Rose on that metal show, I mean, we literally waited 13 hours or so for that interview.
Jesus.
So that was pretty crazy. And then, you know, on a completely other note, like sometimes that I find a lot with interviews is that you get the people around the artists, the handlers, the media people, the mm-hmm. publicists, the managers, they wind things up to a degree that doesn't need to exist. They try so hard, maybe overcompensating for their job or to earn their paycheck, that they put you in a position where you really feel like this is going to be really difficult and ask this, don't ask this. One of my biggest rules is I won't do interviews with preconditions. Like I won't do an interview if somebody says to me, but you can't ask about. And I will, but I'll tell the person I need to disclose that you told me I can't ask about this. Because okay. Then it just sounds like to my audience, I'm not doing my job.
Yes. Sure.
Or I'll tell them, look, you can answer this however you want, but you can't tell me I can't ask it. Like, I'll never forget the first time Zach Wilde was out of Ozzy's band. He had already been booked to do my radio show. And then like the day before, the news came down that he was out of Ozzy. So I'm like, oh, the timing works out great for this. I can talk to Zach about it. And that day the label person called me and said, hey, we know you got Zach booked. He's still going to do the interview, but you can't ask him about being out of Ozzy. And I'm like, entire audience listening, how do I not ask that question? I would look like the biggest heel on the planet.
Of course.
No, you can't do it. So I passed on the interview. I said, and then I'm sorry, I can't do the interview. And what was crazy about that is I know Zach well enough to text him.
Yeah.
And I texted him. I go, hey, bro, nothing personal, but, and he knew nothing about it.
Oh,
so
wow,
that's really? What I mean by like handlers getting in the mix with things. And, you know, I did an interview a couple years ago. It was the first interview Steve Perry did in like ages.
I listened to a little bit of that.
It was the launch of his solo record. And everyone was sort of winding me up about, well, he might not want to talk about Journey too much. And you might want to stay away from this and that. And they, you know, people were like, it was like a boxer getting ready to go in the ring, like prepping me. And I'm like, I don't need this noise. Just let me do my thing. And he couldn't have been greater. Like he, like you could tell none of that pressure was coming from him. He was just like, awesome, let's go. So yeah. It's really hard. Like I'm fortunate that I have the history I have where I can cut through some of that stuff. And that gives me a great advantage.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I wanted to ask you nowadays with the lack of touring bands are doing, bands are still putting out content. They're still putting out music. But on your end, are you finding it like a little hard to come up with content daily for your shows?
No, I'm lucky. I mean, when the pandemic first started, the company I work for, SiriusXM. So I'll never forget this call. It was crazy. My program director calls me up and I had always worked from a home studio. I just don't want to go to New York City every day from New Jersey. It's just not, it's part of my deal. Like long gotcha. Before the pandemic, I'm like, it doesn't make a difference where I work from. If somebody's coming into the studio, like that Anselmo interview or something, fine, I'll come into the city. But generally I just don't do it or want to do it. So I had always worked from home, and I got a call from the program director, and he said, so they're closing all the buildings like tomorrow or something. Okay. And SiriusXM has multiple studios and headquarters, the main ones being New York, then Washington, D.C., then L.A. And that's where all the operations come from and everything. And I go, you're closing, we're closing the buildings. And he said, yeah. And my engineer and my producer and everything are in those buildings. I said, well, what's going to happen? He goes, well, what I'm telling you is you can't do a live show for the foreseeable future. I'm like, wait a minute. I do a talk show. Like, I'm a solo act. I don't have a co-host. Like, I rely on my callers to give me
feedback.
If I have nothing, I can at least always go to the phones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if I don't have phones, like, what am I doing? So he said, got to figure it out. Wow. So for like 3 months, I had to do my show pre-recorded, where I would do it just talking into a microphone and sending the file in the night before, and it would air the next day.
Okay.
And I couldn't even do interviews because I didn't have my phone stuff was coming through the buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was literally me just finding something to riff on and fill 2 hours a day for a little while. And then it became, they gave me this unit that could record phone calls at home. So then I could at least put interviews in, but nothing was live. Mm-hmm. And then I started, instead of answering phones, answering emails and telling people when to email in. So I figured that was tough, but we navigated through that. And then after a couple months, they had these engineering substations set up around the country. So there were people with these engineering consoles in their house that were running my show. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. Wow. And then it was only as recently as a couple months ago that they opened the buildings in New York and L.A. only for essential personnel doing that engineering work. So now we're back to as normal as we can be until we can physically, everyone can go back in the studios. So it was a little crazy there for a minute, but in the last couple months, it's really smoothed out. And I'm really lucky in the sense that when I go on the air, I mean, there's days that I go on the air and I mean, I may have a guest in the second hour or something, but there's days I'll go on the air and I honestly 60 seconds to live and I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth. and somehow I've always had the gift of gab and, I come from a dominantly Italian household where everybody talks with their hands. Yep. And that's me. So I can pull shit out of nowhere. Like 2 days ago, I'm about to go on the air and I found an old tour book from an old Kiss show that I went to. And I started talking about the tour book on the air. And the next thing you know, I have a dozen incoming lines and they all start flashing because everyone wants to call in and tell their story about their first tour book. There's the show. It's gone.
Yeah.
And 60 seconds before I went on the air, I had no idea I was going to talk about tour books. So it's great. I love that. And I love that spontaneity. And it's just like whatever happens.
I think that's an awesome, that's a God-given attribute because it's not you're just filling time and you're not just a gift of gab. Okay. But you make it interesting to the listener. So, I mean, that's a whole entirely different thing in and of itself. I think that kind of stuff, again, Archie and I have a little bit of background in music and, doing a podcast, but the appreciation we have for that, I don't know if the regular rank and file ordinary person like understands what goes into that. That's not just, it doesn't just happen.
Well, it comes from tons of experience. Like I started this whole world 38 years ago. I mean, wow. I literally started right out of high school. So I was 18 and I mean, I've told the story before, but I mean, I literally started the day I got out of high school. So it just comes from like the experience of doing it and also knowing my audience and also having built an audience. The one thing, if I've done anything in my career, is stay consistent to what I believe and what I like and what I'm about. So I'm actually talking to, for the most part, people who feel the same way and are into this in the same way that I am, or generally around the same age, predominantly men. So a lot of the things that I may talk about that get me excited or take me down memory lane does the same thing for them. And the one big thing when you talk about radio versus podcasting too, is that radio is live, and it is a very different game. You've got to, there's no safety net. There's no going back and editing something. I love that. I love live. I've always tried to do everything I could do live. When we were doing that metal show, I really always wanted to do a live episode, and we never did. But I love that. And I love knowing that I may not be able to see them. I may not know what they're doing, but I know that if I need them, I can give out that phone number, and I know that I can get some people that are going to help me get through that show, because they might just call up. All it could do is take one person to call up and be like, hey, Eddie, did you see Iron Maiden at Convention Hall open for Judas Priest? Yeah. And then the next thing you know, it might go down the line that we're talking about, like, the kind of T-shirts they were selling or the hot dog vendor outside. And then the guy in California will call up and be like, yeah, I saw that tour and here's what went on. And it just goes like you can feel it like a fire going right across the country. It connects with people. So I love that. I've said many times on my show, I love talking to the audience and engaging with them, honestly, just as much as I do doing a big interview. I really do. So it's that mix. And what I call what I do sports talk for rock fans, because in this area, I grew up listening to FAN. Mm-hmm. And now FAN and ESPN Radio. I have a good friend that works on ESPN Radio, and I love sports talk. And even if they're talking about some of the sports stuff I'm not into, I still love the debate and the discussion. And when I started the volume show, I very much tried to model it after that, where if I listen to the fan, they might have an athlete on talking for a half an hour. And then the next hour is calls screaming and arguing about debating about something. And I just want to take those same things and apply it to rock music.
Yeah, I actually, I was telling Archie, I believe you're a Giants fan.
Like, big time.
Yeah. So we want to talk a little about the Giants. I told Archie he needs to limit any talk about Kiss, because you guys will talk. You and him will probably talk for like 3 hours and I won't be able to say a word.
I just did an all Kiss podcast yesterday called Three Sides of the Coin. I know those guys have been on with them a couple of times. And I think for like 7-8 years, they've been doing a weekly all Kiss podcast. It's crazy. But if you're deep into it, it's great. So we did like a 2-hour nonstop. They had me on as a guest, a nonstop Kiss geek podcast. And it was funny because it was about stuff that actually didn't happen. It was like what if scenarios. So that's really deep.
That's when you know you're stepping into uncharted territories. Yeah,
but you mentioned that metal show. There was a period of time. It was probably like a 2.5 year period of time where my TV did not leave VH1 between that metal show and Behind the Music. It was such an entertaining show, and you guys always kind of made jokes about maybe the production value or what you have. But holy shit, did you guys not make that fun?
Well, that was always the idea, and it was easy to make it fun, given that I was working with Don and Jim, because we were all friends. We were friends before we did that show together, and of course, they're both comics and stand-up comics for a living, so the ball-busting was endless and merciless.
I could imagine.
And it went on during the show, before the show, after the show, during the commercial breaks. It was just endless. So we had a great time doing it. I mean, it wasn't without its challenges. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it was a battle for me to get that show on the air and to keep it on the air, to be honest. But it was, it's something I'm incredibly proud of, and it's something I put a ton of work into, and it's something I'm still asked about all the time. And, the biggest question I get all the time is, will it ever come back? And it's like, we'll all do it again tomorrow. It's just out of our hands. It's just the network owns it. And should they decide to want to do it, or we can find a viable outlet that wants to do it, we'll do it again tomorrow. There's a lot of people that, when I say that, the initial thing is like, just do it on YouTube, dude. And it's like, It doesn't work that way. It's like you I want to be able to do it at least of the quality that we had been doing it.
Sure.
And believe it or not, as much as we goofed on the production value, it wasn't super cheap to do. So you need to have money. Not that we made a ton of money, but you need to have money to have it be at least of the quality that it was.
Yeah.
Because then if you don't do that, then it's just another stupid YouTube show again, you know? So you can't win in that scenario. So I understand the future is online and streaming and Netflix and all that, but I want to be able to do it at least of a quality that we were doing it at, if not beyond that. And it's just, you know, to make the math work and have it make sense for everybody is difficult. And you've got to have a network that wants to be invested in it. And VH1 owns that property still. So, I had a conversation with them a couple weeks ago. There's one guy left there from my time that's still there. And, you know, there's some new things they're going to try down the line, and who knows how that plays out and who knows what that might mean. But the interesting thing is they just started putting the old episodes on the VH1 website. So that's never happened before. So we'll see. I never say never, and we're all on board to do it, but it's out of our hands for the most part. If another network stepped up tomorrow and said, hey, we want to do it. If Netflix called tomorrow and said, we want to do it, we could do it. We'd have to figure out the way to do it, but we could do it. So it's just really what it boils down to is finding the outlet that could do it and also monetize it to make it work so everyone got paid. And I'm not even talking about us as hosts. I'm talking about the staff, the producers. You know, you got an audience. There's a live audience. There's an audience wrangler there. The artists, some of them had to be flown in. It's not, we joked that we were Wayne's World, but, you know, there was overhead there. It was a significant amount of money to make that happen.
Yeah.
You know, I tell you though, you guys had awesome guests. Like you said, Jericho, Phil Anselmo, M Shadows. I mean, it wasn't like you were getting like, you know, the producer from, you know, some obscure album. It was good guests. So it was like super entertaining.
Yeah. Just about any major artist you can name had been on that show at one point. And then we were very proud of having newer emerging artists on and younger artists and mixing it up as we went, getting more diverse as we went. I mean, we were really up for that. And, you know, a lot of the guests, and this isn't just me, you know, tooting my own horn at all, but the huge majority of the guests I personally booked because I had relationships with them. I mean, when we started doing that metal show in 08, I had by that time, you know, I'd started in radio in 87.
Wow.
I'm sorry, 83. So I already had, you know, over 20 years of connections and relationships with these artists.
Yeah.
So I, the network would always defer to me. Now I would need the network to approve the guest, but as far as like booking them and going out and getting them, honestly, probably over 95% of it was me. It was part of my job description actually. So, and that's how it is even to this day with my radio show. We have a great talent department at Sirius XM, but there's times where they're just like, you know what, go ahead and just do it because it in one text or one email, you're going to get the same answer and it just cuts out the middleman and can make things happen quicker. So again, it's just an intangible that I bring that comes from decades of experience. Prior to that metal show, what a lot of people don't know is I was a host on VH1 Classic. Yeah. I was a VJ there. I did a ton of work there. So that all of this stuff just carried over into that metal show.
Well, I know that my brother and my wife and I went to go see that metal show once, and my wife's favorite drummer is Dave Lombardo. And it happened to be the fucking episode that Dave Lombardo was like, how would that happen now? And I'm just bringing this up. It's a little nostalgic for us, but my favorite band is Life of Agony. And Joey Z was in the crowd that day. So I'm sitting here and my favorite guitar player is to the left of me. Also, Freddie from Dingbats was there that day. I don't know if you recall that episode.
Of course, I love Freddie, and I think he was at more than one taping, but I do remember there was a crowd shot of Freddie because I remember an episode airing. There was Freddie sitting right in the stands. Yes.
John 5 is doing the, you know, like the your guest playing. I'm like,
Oh, God, I fucking love this show. Just like a thousand, you know, fucking a million metalheads out there. We love the show.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. I'll tell you, we did the first two seasons in New York, the last two seasons in New York, and the middle 10 seasons all in L.A. So and we got into like this struggle because when we moved it to L.A., the New York people were like, oh, you big time going to Hollywood now. All that. And it's like, no, we went there simply because 90% of the artists live there. It just was easier to get guests. That's all. Yeah. But then what happened was why we brought it back to New York the last two seasons was the show had gotten so popular that the guests were starting to route around to get to us. Wow. Like they were timing releases around us and tour announcements around us. So then we realized we had some leverage and it was like, all right, now they're willing to come to us so we can stay home. So that's why it ended up coming back. And, you know, just for clarity, there's a lot of people that think that metal show was canceled or taken off the air. It wasn't. The network was taken off the air.
Yeah.
We were on VH1 Classic. VH1 Classic doesn't exist anymore. There's people to this day that say to me, oh man, my cable company doesn't have VH1 Classic anymore. No cable company still. It's gone. It doesn't exist. That's why the show went away, because the network changed.
Wow. Well, regardless what Rocco says, fuck him. I'm just bringing up a little bit of Kiss, Eddie. And then I said
you could do a little bit. You could do a little bit.
And that's it. I'm just doing a little bit. I know you talk Kiss probably every day of your life. Your wife probably fucking looks at you.
Never mind. Nah, it's all good.
So a little something. My brother actually was born in 64, and I believe he's same age as you. Yep. He was a huge influence on me growing up. As I went to school, I had a Destroyer jacket on, you know, handmade, and people are listening to Wu-Tang, Tupac, and Biggie, which I love, but it's just a different type of, like, what the fuck are you wearing, man? You know, that type of shit when I was going to school in the 90s. Takes me to my first concert at the Nassau Coliseum, 1990, Hot in the Shade tour. I saw Paul playing fucking seven rows in front of me. The drips are coming down from this pipe. The fucking water's hitting his guitar. I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. I'll fucking never, you know, I never forget that image. It's embedded in my brain.
Why'd you go to Nassau instead of the Meadowlands?
Well, you're going to have to talk to my older brother on that one. I was 11. I don't know.
Do you know who got to intro them at the Meadowlands show?
No, I do not know.
Me.
No shit.
Ooh,
yeah.
Nice.
You know, I don't know what? When my brother hears this, he better have an answer.
No, but I'm just wondering. I'm not saying it for that reason. I'm just saying because you say you're from Jersey. I mean, I despise going to Long Island just because traffic and shit. But
bro, I lived eight. We Rocco and I lived 8 minutes from the Meadowlands. So why didn't we go to the Meadowlands? I don't know.
Yeah, Nassau's not fun to get to.
No,
right.
But that was my introduction to Kiss, and I became a Kiss fan from then on. So that was, and that has nothing to even do with makeup, as all the other fans know. You know, at that time.
But that to me was by far the best show and set they did of the non-original band. Like to me, that was the best lineup. That was the best set list. That was the best stage of the non-original era of the band.
Great. It was phenomenal. I mean, Bruce Kulick, phenomenal guitar player. Eric.
He's a great guy, too.
Amazing. I just wanted to give you a little something on that. But fast forward many years later, I'm talking to my brother, and I'm like, listen, they're being inducted. Finally, they're being inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I heard interviews of you being at the table with Ace and Peter, or with Ace. I know that, right?
Ace and Peter. Like, I was sitting right next to Ace, and Peter was the next table over.
You're going to tell me, as a fan, you're not going to give us one fucking song. One song. Just one. You don't have to lie back in bed with them. You don't have to give Peter a stress test. You don't have to put Ace on a treadmill. You don't have to do one song. I'm texting. I remember I was delivering pizza at that time. I'm texting my brother. I'm like, what the fuck is the matter with them? Like it's a big deal. Like it's going to bother me. I'm like, what the fuck is their problem? One song. And they show up with no makeup. And I just wanted to hear just a minute. I know you could probably go for an hour, but I just wanted to hear your take just for a second.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I've said a million times it was an unbelievable slap in the face, I thought, to the fans.
Yes.
When, you know, Gene and Paul are huge on saying, all the time, the fans are the boss and all that sort of stuff. Well, the fans were really the boss. You would have sucked it up that night because nobody wanted you in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame more than the fans. And you would have at least given them what they wanted that night. And the, look, you know, the, I have a really weird thing with Kiss because people know me as being such a big Kiss fan, and I am, and they were the gateway band for me. But I also am very honest about how I feel about things. And with them and any band, like if there's an era or a period or something they did in their history that I don't like, I'm vocal about it, like any fan should have the right to be.
Correct.
And most bands and their fans are like that and understand that. But there's a segment of Kiss fans where you can't have a dissenting opinion or you get branded as the enemy or something.
Yeah.
And it's really always been very bizarre to me, but I don't cave to that stuff. I'll always be a fan. I can say this with full confidence. I've probably more consistently supported that band in every incarnation more than certainly in their home market, New York City, more so than anybody ever has. I fought for them to get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, yep. You know, Ace and Peter to this day are still dear friends. But it's just insane that Gene and Paul refused to play a song with them. And that's the simple truth. And I know this because not only was I there, but I worked, you know, I helped and you know, took calls and had discussions with Ace and Peter throughout that whole thing because yeah. What had happened was Gene and Paul wanted to play, but they wanted to play with the current version of the band who were not being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm.
And Ace and Peter, as you would imagine, their position was like, wait a minute. So we're supposed to stay in our seats, watch two guys impersonating us who aren't being inducted, and then go up and put on a big smile. And they had no recourse against that happening than to say, if that happens, we don't show up.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame wants is for people being inducted to boycott it and not physically be there. So when they threatened that, the concession back was, okay, nobody plays. Gene and Paul won't play with let them play. Ace and Peter won't let the other two guys play and watch them. So nobody plays. And that's why it went down that way. And I agree with you. I mean, nobody said that they would have to go out and do another reunion tour.
No.
Nobody said that it had to be a full set. But even out of makeup, two songs, just to give some closure to that and give the fans what they wanted, they could not do it. And it's such a lost opportunity, Archie, because I think about this all the time. It's like, those four guys, when you see that photo of them holding their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame things, that press photo, photo from the press room,
uh-huh.
To this day, that's the last time those four guys were ever in the same room together.
Yeah.
And we all know the clock's ticking and time's ticking, and that was a lost opportunity. And the other thing about it, which is so sucks so bad for the fans, is we all wanted that moment. And me and all the other fans fought and lobbied and wanted them in the Hall of Fame. Against all odds, they finally get in. And we were shortchanged because the Kiss thing was a blip on the radar because since they didn't play, all it was them talking a few minutes and they were done quicker than any other band. It was ridiculous. Springsteen's band, who was inducted, are still talking. They're still on the podium. It's just like... It's like as Kiss fans, we got shafted because we got no performance. We got no tribute performance. We got nothing but thank you and okay, we're out of here and we're all going to take pictures all wearing sunglasses and leave.
Well,
I mean, that's what we got for like 15 years of screaming for them going in the Hall of Fame. All because, if we're being totally honest, Gene and Paul refused to take the stage with those guys. And I have a theory about that too. And the reason I was at the taping of Kiss Unplugged, and when they brought out Ace and Peter,
mm-hmm.
the crowd went bonkers. And that's what led to them having to do a reunion in 96.
Okay.
And I'm sure in their mind, for their business model, it would not work to put that whole big, like they knew if they played, people were going to go crazy again.
Yeah.
And want that again, and it would derail their whole thing
Gotcha.
Of playing with the current lineup that they have now.
I'll tell you this. I thought I was upset, and I can't think of the show. It was on, I think it was on a VH1. Maybe it was a Bands Reunited. I was upset when every episode I watched of that show, like 2001, 2002, every band got together and like did something extreme. Nuno Bettencourt and Gary Cherone didn't. And I'm like, you're fucking kidding me, right?
I actually thought that was extremely cool, believe it or not.
Listen, it's not what you guys felt about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but I felt it right here, man.
Well, they are back together and have been ever since then. But I just thought that, you know why I always thought that was cool was because, and a lot of people thought Nuno was such a dick about that and whatever, but I always thought it was cool because he didn't cave to it. He was eating. Who are you? No, I'm not signing it. What are you, crazy? Like, he held his ground. And then later on, he did it on his terms. But I always thought that was like really cool. I mean, I've talked to Nuno about that. He's a friend, and but I just thought he was like the one guy that would not cave. And I just thought that was actually really cool.
That's great.
It's so funny because I was like a big Extreme fan, and I'm like, I saw every band was like, yeah. And right. Then one I wanted to see, I'm like, no way. That's impossible.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I thought because it was so like bucking the trend, I just thought it was really cool. But back to the Hall, I mean, there's a huge history of bands sucking it up for the moment for their fans. Cheap Trick, who was inducted, they were in a lawsuit with Bunny Carlos, and they said, yeah, we'll do the few songs because he's being inducted, and then they played with him. The same with Heart. Heart, those people that were in Heart, they weren't in the band anymore. That's the right thing to do. They did it. Kiss couldn't make it work.
Well, It's a shame, honestly. I again, not a Kiss fan.
Just a short change for the fans. That's all. It really is.
Yeah, that's yes, 100%. Because I feel that you want to know what that could have been your last hurrah. You didn't have to go back on tour. That was your last hurrah. You fucking made it. You got into the pearly gates. I know Paul didn't think about those were the pearly gates, but I'm saying you got in and that's it. You could have just did one more song. And call it
Even if you hate the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which again, they kind of went in kicking and screaming like you alluded to.
Yeah.
But if you talk to any of these artists, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is about it's a fan thing. The fans get more excited than anybody. It's some sort of validation for the fans. So for a band that all they do is talk about how the fans are the bosses, they didn't let them have what they wanted that night.
Well, I'll tell you, Eddie, you could definitely take solace in the fact that you've done so much for bands, for lobbying to get them in the Rock and Roll of Fame. You've been very vocal. Once they're there, hey, listen, if they can't get it together, they can't get it together, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a voter. I do vote for the Hall of Fame. I've been a voter for about 5 years, which as much as I hammer the Hall of Fame, I do have to give them credit because it's gotten better in recent years. And, even though I've been vocal about it, they actually put me on the voting committee. So I'm one of about 1,000 people total that actually determines who gets in. Now, just to be clear, I don't, and the voting panel doesn't decide who gets nominated. A different group does that and a much smaller group. But then when they pick the nominees, those ballots go to me and about 1,000 other people, and we determine who goes in of the 12 people they'll give us, the 5 that actually go in. So it's a pretty important thing, and I take it really seriously. And I think one of the reasons why it's changed and gotten better for rock acts is because they've let more people in with sensibilities like mine that are, into more hard rock music. And also, when a band gets inducted, they themselves then get votes going forward. So now that Rush or Kiss or Cheap Trick or Alice Cooper are finally in, they actually get to vote every year as well.
That's cool.
That's awesome. We got a couple more for you. I can't let you go without knowing what you thought about the end of the Giants season. Again, obviously didn't win more than 6 games to have a case for the playoffs, but what did you think about that last game with Philadelphia? Now, Doug Peterson, they ultimately got fired for it, but what are your thoughts?
I don't know if he got fired for that. Did they ever say he actually got fired for that?
I don't know if they tied it to it, but he basically tanked that game to get a higher draft pick, and now he's not going to be the coach anymore, which sucks for him.
I think, look... You can easily say, as a Giant fan, you know, sour grapes, stop crying. You should have won a couple more games. I get all that. Okay. It was such a blatant tank. It was crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about it to me is I think the NFL has a real problem that they need to address. And if that doesn't get them to address it, they're never going to. And that is the blatant tanking for draft picks. Like, they need to install, like, the NBA has a lottery or something, because it's crazy. Like, the Jet fans were outraged they actually won a game. Like, you can't have your sport like that blatantly having fans root for losing, or a coach of a franchise blatantly tanking a game. To me, the fact that there wasn't a response from the NFL yet, and that, I mean, they've got to bring that into the rules committee, because that's going to be a problem every year. If you're mathematically out of it, who's going to want to win? And if you've got your coach actually encouraging the tank, it's a big problem. So it stung me as a Giants fan, because I really thought, and I may, you know, I'm always optimistic with the Giants, and I may be delusional, but I really thought the Giants could have gone in there and put something together and at least given the Bucs a game.
Agreed.
I think the Giants, just Brady seeing the Giants, would have been in his head a little bit. Agreed. In a playoff scenario. So I thought they would have given a hell of a lot better game than Washington ended up giving them. And it would have been fun to get another game and see what happens. But that was horrible. And Peterson should have been fired for a lot of reasons, but I think the bigger issue is the NFL has to look into that. I think that's a problem that's getting bigger and bigger every year, and you've got to fix that, because it's not going to stop.
I especially think too, because it's such a contact sport. You know, those are guys who suit up, practice all week, you know, are giving it their all. I think when it's a contact sport, and if one team is going to tank or what have you, a predetermined outcome, whatever it is, people can get hurt. And I think because there's only 16 games in the year, that they need to, you know, every game is precious. And for that kind of thing, I know that some people say, well, the Giants fans don't have a kick coming because they won six games. But they would have still been on top of their division, right? And like you said, I think they would have given the Bucs a game. I think that us, after the year, you know, in sports, watching a Giants playoff game, I'll take that rather than a draft pick.
The other big aspect of it, which should be a big flag in consideration for the NFL as well, is the fact that here in New Jersey, sports gambling is legal. Now in other parts of the country, it was always legal in Vegas, and some other states it's legal too. So you actually have legalized sports betting, and you've got a coach blatantly tanking a game. There's implications there too. You could do an investigation. What about if Peterson had, you know, over under money, or had the line, or had some money in somewhere? You don't know. That's another huge consideration. Of course, sports gambling's gone on forever illegally, but now it's actually legal in some places. So I was saying to people when that happened that the NFL should investigate. And they're like, investigate what? What are you talking about? I'm like, find out if the guy had money in it, a book somewhere or something. Whether it's on the over under or whatever. I mean, you put in a third string quarterback when you were like, I mean, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. The guy was horrible. He could, and that's the thing. You can't, like, can you imagine those players who are programmed to win and practiced and fight hard? And there they are, they're in a game that they're expected to lose. And then all of a sudden this guy, like, they actually put in an incompetent player to intentionally lose the game. It's just, it's bad on so many levels. It's a horrible look for the NFL. And again, unrelated to the Giants, I mean, just in the New York market, you literally, like, I'm not a Jets fan, but you had Jet fans, like, back page of the paper, pissed off that they won a game.
I know.
that's like, you know, that's just bad for your sport.
Well, Eddie, thank you very, very, very. I know we kept you long enough. Thank you so much for your time. If there is 2021, Kiss's final show, if they are coming back, I'll be there. I'm sure you will be.
No.
But no, well, no, I'm saying if the four members are coming back, I'm sure I'll be there. But if the four members are not coming back, I will not be going to their last show.
Yeah, no. Well, I also unless there's some semblance of like the original band.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I checked out after the first farewell tour.
Yes.
But and again, I gotta always say this because it comes off wrong. I have no ill will against Tommy Thayer or Eric Singer. They're great people. They're great musicians. They're great. I know them. I have no issue with them. Never did. Anyone would take that gig. If it wasn't them, someone else would be doing it.
I love Eric Singer.
I always have to be clear about that.
Absolutely.
But it's just a line that was crossed that I can't look at and I don't go to. But if they bring, you know, if the other guys are back, great. But I seriously doubt.
Yeah.
I seriously doubt that happens with the original guys. So more than likely, I won't be there. And here's the other thing. Is anybody going to believe ever that the final Kiss show is the final Kiss show?
I know.
I mean, come on. Ozzy's final show was in 1992. For real.
Very true. Very true. Yes. Again, dude, thank you so much, man. Brother, we appreciate it. We appreciate your time. Rocco, I can speak for Rocco and I. We are big fans of yours. We enjoy whoever you interview. We know, personally, down deep, that metal show will be back somewhere, somehow, some way, and we can't wait. And I know it will be.
Well, you know, deep down inside, I feel that way. And I feel that way because of the fans. They will not let it die.
This show
has been off the air now for this will be the sixth year, and I'm still asked about it every day. The fact that it's popped up on YouTube has got people watching it again and talking about it. It just seems like the fans won't let it die, and as long as they keep talking about it and pushing it and keeping it alive in that way, anything's possible. So I don't rule anything out, and it's just really important for the fans to know. The reason it hasn't come back has absolutely nothing to do with myself, Don, or Jim. The three of us are still really good friends. I was just talking to them a second ago, actually. And, you know, we just also realized that you got to move on. It's out of our control. Yeah. So when it ended, those guys went back focusing on what they do, which is stand up and comedy. I went to what I've always done, which is predominantly radio. I did do a TV series in the last few years for Access TV. That was fun. But, you know, I'm open to everything at this point. And, you know, that metal show was something that I'm very proud of. So if it came back and there's a chance to do it, we'd all do it tomorrow.
Well, we'll tell you this. We love your interview style. You ask real questions. You're a fan. And a lot of people that we see that cover, whether it be sports, whether it be music, sometimes they make themselves feel like they're bigger than the genre they're covering. But like you could, it comes, you know, true to heart. Like you're a fan at heart. And I think that's what drew us to you. And we appreciate your time. And tell us where everybody can find you on the internet.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I really do, Rocco. And that's exactly how I feel. I don't, you know, people have called me a journalist and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not a journalist. I'm just a fan, you know. Mm. Yep. I always think of myself as just a fan. And because I'm just a fan, sometimes I'm so fan-like that it fans can't handle it, because it's like I will have differing opinions on stuff. I like to talk, whether it's radio or TV, just like I would if I was at a bar talking with you guys about music. I don't think that wall should be there. I think we should all be able to have respectful debates and discussions about the bands we love. So I've always felt... I've always identified as a fan first and foremost. I'm lucky that I've got the platforms and the following and the career I've had and put a lot of work into it. But at the end of the day, I still relate exactly as a fan would. And as far as finding me, social media is just at Eddie Trunk, Twitter and Instagram, which is where I'm most active. And the radio show, if you have Sirius or XM, every day is live 2 to 4 Eastern, channel 106 volume. You can hear it on the app as well, streaming live. It replays every night, 10 to midnight Eastern as well. And there's a sixth show on Sirius XM on Mondays, 5 to 8 Eastern. That's on Hair Nation 39. And there's a syndicated show in the New York area. It airs Friday nights at 11 on Q104.3. And the podcast, which is every week, and as we talked about earlier, is basically a repurpose of one of the interviews. So it's it's 8 shows a week, 6 live, and whatever else drops in my lap. And hopefully after this whole pandemic madness goes away, I was spending a lot of time on the road broadcasting from different events. I was doing a monthly show from the Rainbow in LA. Hopefully that all comes back when we're able to move around and travel again, which hopefully will be by the end of the year.
After all that, Eddie, it sounds like you need a hobby.
You know, I keep busy, but I'm always like, you know, the one thing I wish I learned how to do is play guitar. And I was like, this pandemic, I'm like, you know, I'm going to have a lot of time now, just be sitting home for a year. Maybe I'll just do that. And it just turned out I just didn't have the time. So I still haven't learned how to play a note.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Archie either, and he's a guitar player.
Go fuck yourself, Rocky. Ladies and gentlemen, the great Eddie Trunk. Rocco and I will see you in Lavalette this summer. We love hot dogs and hamburgers.
Guys.
Everyone. Eddie, thank you so much.
You are welcome. I'll gladly throw for a couple of Jersey guys. I'll throw a Tallahassee egg and cheese yes! on for you.
Yes. Yes.
Whatever you want, a cheesesteak from Midway, whatever you want to do, we'll do
it. Oh, my God.
Brother, man. Awesome. Hopefully, one day down the road, we get to do this in person somewhere, somehow. Yeah,
but for sure, guys. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, pal. Stay well.
Stay safe.
Take care. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the great Eddie Trunk. Not only was I so fucking stoked that this was the coolest guest that we had on, just joking, everybody is the fucking coolest, but I got to talk Kiss. I got to talk fucking Rocco, got to talk a little Giants. I got to drink some fucking Terramana tequila.
Great. He's fucking awesome. He's just like super passionate about what he does. Like that's like
so passionate. So like there's a fucking dude from New Jersey that graduated high school that got to do what he loved from the time he left his graduation class till now.
Yeah.
See, my life is just like that.
Except the opposite.
But the opposite. By the way, great Phil question. That went a different route. Great Phil question.
Yeah, no, he was good, dude. I
heard that interview. I listened to that interview.
Phil went the whole. He hit every fucking note of fucking. Hey, I'm cordial. I'm angry. I'm fucking pissed. I'm done with this. I'm happy again, and I love everyone.
Yeah,
yeah, Arch. I'll tell you this. Like we said in the interview, he asked questions that I'd want to know.
Yeah.
Like not your standard. I'm a reporter. I'm going to ask you this, and this. What was your favorite song you wrote in the album? What was it? He has such a love and the care about music and the artists and the people that he meets. And, you know, and I said it in there where it's some people cover a sport or cover music and it's almost like they come off like they're bigger than the genre or whatever the fuck they're covering. He's like super appreciative and insightful. And I think that's awesome.
With that being said, Rocco, what do you have to say to the people?
If you just heard us talking to our boy, Jersey's own Eddie Trunk, and you're hiding a little plastic bag from your mom that smells in your dirty sock drawer like skunk, and you know that Arch and Rock hit hard like a Shaq dunk, then you're listening to Not These Two Fucking Guys podcast.
We out.